November 29th at 7 p.m. at Rutgers University's Trades Hall at New Brunswick campus. For further information, please email ebryce@eden.rutgers.edu or leave a message at 212-209-2800. Again, that's 212-209-2800. And she works till we pass up.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. It's 7 o'clock on a Wednesday, time once again for Off the Hook. This is the music that you hear when you somehow forget to bring in the theme for Off the Hook. It's just something that happened to be lying around. Sorry, we seem to have misplaced it, but it'll be back again next week, we promise. We also seem to have misplaced a number of people. I think they misplaced themselves. It being holiday and all that kind of thing, a lot of people have taken off for more pleasant areas, I guess. So we have a skeleton crew here tonight, but hopefully we have all of our listeners still in attendance. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for this edition of Off the Hook. Bernie S. joining me from down there in Philadelphia.
Good evening and happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. And Jim is over on the other side of the studio there. And
happy Thanksgiving to all.
And Redbird is here.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And that's it. That's everybody. That's everyone that we have here. So we have a lot of material, though, a lot of things to discuss and debate and go over. How are things down by you, Bernie?
It's a rainy evening, but there seems to be a lot of goodwill in the air, people wishing themselves, wishing each other a happy Thanksgiving, and just a lot of people are thinking about what they should be thankful for. And it's kind of hard in these days to think about what one should be thankful for, but you just have to try harder.
Yeah, well, I didn't notice that kind of cooperation at all. People seem to be kind of cranky up here and surly and that kind of thing.
Well, this is the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's up with the exploding cell phones? I'm hearing about this everywhere. Phones exploding in people's hands, and that's going to make you cranky, all right.
That would ruin my day, I'll tell you. I think what it is a lot of people are, as more and more cell phones are sold, people are turning to cheaper third-party cell phone batteries, which are typically kind of substandard, and these lithium batteries, lithium-ion batteries, have a tendency to change chemically and cause an electrical short internally, which then generates lots of heat, which has nowhere to go but bang, because these are sealed metal. Tiny sealed metal canisters. So down in Spring, Texas, a fourth grader, his cell phone blew up in his hand.
A fourth grader with fourth graders have cell phones?
Believe it or not.
What in God's name is going on? What does a fourth grader need a cell phone for?
Well, his mother said that, he really needs a cell phone, but he's been afraid to go near the thing.
Fourth grader, really? What, he's like 8 years old. He really needs a cell phone.
Well, I think parents want to give them to their kids just to keep track of them, maybe. Especially now that these location services are available from some carriers where you can actually find out where your
Bernie, cell phone
is.
For centuries, for millennia, in fact, parents have been able to keep track of their kids without the help of electronics.
I agree.
I just think it's a microcosm of what's going on in society where we need to be tracked everywhere we go. I mean, I was 8 years old once, and I had no trouble getting around without having, you know, pagers and cell phones and you know, all kinds of GPS devices.
Life was easier. Life was easier. But, you could hear your mother calling.
Yeah, it was simpler back then.
But we know what that led to, though.
What did it lead to?
You're here now.
This period of craziness is what it led to. Ugh.
But anyway, if people want to avoid the exploding cell phone syndrome, it would be a wise idea to purchase a battery made by the manufacturer of your cell phone, not a third-party battery, because some of the cheaper Chinese ones tend to have this problem.
But what if you have a Chinese phone, a cheap Chinese phone?
Well, that's a good point. They are probably all on the cheaper. What I mean is the cheaper Chinese third-party batteries, like the batteries that are made by a company other than the manufacturer's cell phone. But Kyocera, one of the biggest cell phone companies, they've recalled thousands of phones. And they make a lot of popular phones. My girlfriend has a Kyocera cell phone. And, you know, see, but it hasn't been recalled as far as I know.
Okay. Well, in other advances in humanity, as I turn the TV off, hunters, you hear about this? Hunters soon, I can tell you have, may be able to sit at their computers and blast away at animals on a Texas ranch via the internet. That's a prospect that has state wildlife officials up in arms. No pun intended, I hope. A controversial website, www.live-shot.com, already offers target practice with a .22 caliber rifle and could soon let hunters shoot at deer, antelope, and wild pigs, according to site creator John Underwood. The idea, this is the best part, the idea came last year while viewing another website on which cameras posted in the wild are used to snap photos of animals. We were looking at a beautiful white-tailed buck, and my friend said, "If you just had a gun for that." Oh, America, you gotta love it. A little light bulb went off in my head, the inventor said. So this guy's going to offer animal hunting as soon as he gets a fast internet connection. That's the only thing holding him up right now, apparently, because he has a remote ranch, and I guess he's got to get DSL or something out there, and he needs a fast connection to enable hunters to aim the rifle quickly at passing animals. He said an attendant, this is also interesting, would retrieve shot animals for the shooters. I assume they'll deactivate the gun at that point when the attendant goes out to get them. And then they could have the heads preserved by a taxidermist. They could also have the meat processed and shipped home or donated to animal orphanages.
Animal orphanages?
What? I'm not even going to touch that last part, but... But, you know, this whole thing about hunting is for sportsmen. Doesn't this kind of take all the sportsmanship out of it? You're sitting at home on your fat ass, punching buttons and shooting animals states away, and then having the meat sent to you in boxes?
Yeah. How many of us have visited webcams before? You know, this is just like, this is the same sort of thing. This is gun cam. So pretty soon you'll be finding guns on the internet that you can just start blazing away at things.
And I'll bet somebody is going to figure out a way to turn a webcam into a gun cam and blast away some unsuspecting human beings remotely. That's going to happen.
That could cause the Secret Service a real big enforcement hassle.
It really could. I mean, think about it. Think if you actually use this against humans in some way, you know, traffic cameras or news camera. There's all kinds of things you could probably do with this technology.
You know, the guy who had this idea, unfortunately, he hasn't thought this through. He's saying he's waiting for a high-speed connection. He really shouldn't, because with a bad connection, the odds of them actually hitting an animal go down. So consequently, he has more animals, more targets. People will be frustrated and continue to pay for their ability to shoot at these animals.
I think people will just wait for the wild pigs to go to sleep, and then they'll start shooting them.
But, you know, let's think about this. There's going to be some kind of a machine somewhere in the middle of the forest that just is shooting randomly.
Not randomly, based on
some chucklehead someplace pressing buttons. But imagine that you're lost in the woods, and this device is left on.
It's going to be, I'm sure, a private preserve. The gun will have degrees of restriction.
So somebody will be trespassing, and they'll be lost, and they'll get shot by somebody in a different country because of it.
Well, in that case, if you get shot while trespassing, that's fine by me.
That's fine by you, yeah.
This guy in Texas has a 330-acre private ranch, and that's where he set this thing up. But, you know, it's going to catch on like wildfire down in Texas and other places like that, and there are going to be more of these. So
yeah, and you know what else? You know what else, Bernie? As long as I'm thinking about this really for the first time ever, why not set these things up in schools? Okay, that way. No, I'm serious. That way, if a school shooting starts taking place, you can take out the shooters without having to send cops in to risk their lives, and maybe have them in Burger Kings and, you know, drive-ins and all kinds of things like that. Hell, have them on street corners. If you see somebody that you know is a wanted terrorist, or you see a gang fight starting, you just open fire. Maybe you give a little buzzer warning first.
I'm sure law enforcement would want that, you know, to be able to spread their enforcement.
Sort of like RoboCop.
A few years ago, maybe 20 years ago, it would have been just as unbelievable to think of all the cameras that are around spying on us now. So, I don't know, gun enforcement from remote, that definitely has possibilities. All right, enough about that.
Well, you know, briefly, though, this reminds me a lot of these remote-controlled guns and bombs that the CIA has been using to assassinate suspected Al-Qaeda members.
Sure.
In Afghanistan, they had that remote-controlled airplane that they controlled from, you know, probably hundreds or thousands of miles away to, like, zoom in and drop a bomb on these people. So it's really, like, virtual
it was
killing.
Even a class project in some high school in Montana where they let the kids press the buttons to fire the bombs.
Terrific.
No, it's just something I made up. But you could believe that.
Oh,
you really could.
Well,
you
I
believed that, didn't
that.
You?
No, it's to the point where this is plausible now.
This day and age, anything's possible. I mean, you know, look at how the news has gone in the last few weeks. We have videos of U.S. Marines inside mosques killing unarmed people.
One Marine, one mosque, one person.
On film, Jim, on film.
One Marine, one mosque, No.
Hold on a second.
Wounded
Did you see all the bodies that were lying in that mosque?
The other
more
people
than one
are
body.
Allegedly alive.
And certainly more. No, they were dead.
No, the other people in the Marine shooting where he's up against the wall and the NBC guy has the film of it, the other two are alive, according to all the reports.
Why was the guy saying he's faking being dead then?
That one guy was faking being dead.
Right, and everybody else was... He killed the guy because he didn't think he should be alive. Now everybody else.
No, he killed the guy because other insurgents had faked being dead and had activated booby traps or pulled guns.
I don't want to spend too much time on this, but if you look at the video, what are the other people doing who are lying on the ground not moving? Are they pretending to be
the video is of poor quality. I don't know about that. I read an interview.
Perfect quality.
No, it's of course it's not like any TV movie.
Shot by an NBC cameraman. I mean, you know, it's
look, I've read interviews with the NBC cameraman. He said the other guys were clearly alive, not faking being dead. The one in the corner, he was too far away to be sure, but it looked like the Marine was right. He was faking being dead. This is something
it doesn't
that
even make
we,
sense.
It does. But this is something that we are not equipped to even discuss with the limited information we have at this
point.
Well,
I don't need much information to see what I see on video of some guy shooting an unarmed person. I really want to spend a lot of time on this. I'm making a point, though, that, you know, we've come a long way in 20 years where we're actually inside mosques killing unarmed people and using profanity, too, which is something that's very offensive inside a mosque.
Well, at least that last bit I know is sarcasm.
No, I mean, it really is.
You're
offensive.
Shocked at Marines using profanity.
Inside a mosque, yeah. Well, again, I don't want to spend very much time on this. I'm just saying that that we are living in a society that would have been undreamed of 20 years ago. So I can only imagine. You know, I'll bet, and I'm serious about this, I'll bet these automatic remote-controlled guns will be set up on streets where curfews are being enforced. Anybody who steps out onto the street after curfew, maybe in Fallujah, maybe they'll set them up there, gets shot. All right? They broke the law. They should have known what was coming. It's not so far off, is it?
Well, that I agree. It's not so far off.
All right. Let's go to something a little bit less dangerous. Amtrak. Amtrak conductors have begun random checks of passengers' IDs as a precaution against terrorist attacks. The onboard checks, which started at the beginning of November, are part of a broader program to improve security, according to Amtrak. It's a ticket verification program, which is not intended to determine a person's identity, but to make sure the person who's traveling with the ticket is the person whose name is on the ticket. So I guess if you say you're Daffy Duck or something, as long as you buy the ticket under that name and have some sort of ID that says that you're that person, they just have to match. These checks have not resulted in any arrests, according to Amtrak. They're also requiring passengers to show identification when buying a ticket at ticket counters and to tag all luggage with the owner's address. Of course, if you buy a ticket from a machine, you just have to put in your credit card. So if you have a fake name on a credit card, as I do, and I get in trouble for this so many times at Borders, you just have to have that name on your ticket and have a credit card that matches that name. That's simple.
But Emmanuel.
Yes.
You can, at the kiosks I found, at the Amtrak ticket kiosks, where you're just dealing with a machine, you can type in any name you want to appear on that ticket.
Really?
I've done it.
You can type it. I guess if you're buying tickets with somebody else, I guess you could do that.
I was half tempted a couple of years ago when I was in New York to type in Osama bin Laden on my ticket, but then I thought twice and maybe it wouldn't be a good idea. But I could have done it. I started typing the O, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to change that and start, you know, spell my real name.
I bet if you actually type that, an alarm goes off someplace inside that computer system.
It would be interesting to find out.
Well, you know, what you could always do at no risk to yourself is you could print out the ticket and simply not use it and then claim to have found it. And turn it in as proof that Osama was planning to go somewhere via Amtrak.
His ticket was purchased with your credit card.
Well, you just hope they don't probe that deeply, but
I think they might.
Remember who we're dealing with here. Entities like the TSA and their ilk.
Do you think this is really going to improve security in the on the trains?
Of course not. It's not improving security in the airplanes or, you know, airports or trains or anywhere.
The biggest train tragedy that was caused by terrorists were the things in Barcelona and Spain recently. And you know, these people left bombs there and then got off the train for the most part. They weren't on the train with them.
Right.
So I don't see how having a ID with your ticket is gonna change that from happening.
Well, they lose the luxury of anonymity, I guess, if they do want to blow themselves up. Which, you know, in the end, you find out who they were anyway, so it's baffling to me. We got a number of pieces of email concerning people upset at being searched on airplanes, or not on airplanes, but in airports. This particular letter, this is a great title, "The TSA Took My Email Away." I love it. "I have a TSA experience for you. I was traveling home from Ohio and left my check-in luggage with the TSA. It's hand-inspected since they don't have the equipment at a small airport like this. While visiting during my stay, I printed email and received certain personal information. I put the personal information in a separate envelope and together with the email, put it on the outside pocket of my check-in luggage. When I unpacked, neither the email nor the envelope were there. What else could it be except that the inspector had taken it and failed to replace the email and envelope in the outside pocket of the check-in? Very scary. Signed, Holly." Another piece of email here. "I love the show. Listen online. I had a nightmare trying to enter that fair city of yours at election time. My girlfriend and I recently visited the fine city of New York, October 30th through November 8th. At this end in Manchester in the United Kingdom, the security was minimal, to say the least. Grief metal detector, and we were away. On the plane, we were handed our white customs form and green visa waiver form. Being security conscious, I was concerned about filling this in, but hey, if I want to enter the U.S., this is the norm, right? Upon arrival at the U.S. in Newark, we were penned into long barricaded lines and forced to wait on an available U.S. customs officer to process us. We arrived at the desk and the lady asked for our completed forms. We then had our photos taken and our index finger on each hand printed. Lo and behold, my new machine-readable passport would not machine read. This must have raised suspicion as we were scrutinized by the lady on the desk. I asked why all this was necessary. Why it was necessary twice, and the lady just blindly ignored me like I was speaking a foreign language. Well, you were. You're from England. We proceeded through customs to collect our bags. After this, we were met by another set of security checks. Keep in mind, this is after you arrive in the country. You're not going to blow up a plane at this point. My boarding card must have flagged suspicion at this point as we were grilled by security staff. After 24 hours of being awake and 18 hours of traveling, we were split up and searched by more staff with rubber gloves, which when tired, is annoying and uncomfortable, considering I had a latex outfit in my bag for the Halloween parade and some back issues of 2600 for reading on the plane. They rummaged through all our belongings, asking strange, cross-examining questions. And these are always good. You should always keep track of the questions that you're asked, because sometimes they're real doozies. How do you know each other was one of them. How much money exactly are you each carrying? And even, if you're a university student, how are you funding this trip? Next, our bags were left alone, our shoes were searched, and I was even asked to remove my belt and roll down the waistband of my trousers. After about 10 more minutes of this treatment, our bags, still open and losing their contents, were placed on the floor and we were allowed to go. My trousers were falling down, I had no shoes on, and my bag was everywhere. This was highly embarrassing and not the nicest welcome to the United States, especially since they're our allies. If this is the treatment we got, and some more Brits who were split up and taken to interview rooms, I feel so sorry for anyone of Asian or Eastern origin. This was a complete joke and was very intrusive. I am now on record in the U.S., which I don't like. Signed, Jod's Class. And thanks very much for writing in with that little nightmare story. But it's not so not so unusual, is it?
Sadly, no.
All right. And there is this story that was in several news agencies over the past couple of days. Actually, this came out yesterday. I'm just going to read a little bit of it, but it really brings home some of what's going on out there. Shocked by what she perceived as far too intimate a security check, Melanie Higley burst into tears. First, the wand was placed too aggressively between her legs. Then the airport screener at Dallas-Fort Worth International groped her, she said. Hysterical, she protested that she was being abused. The screener's response, she was just doing her job. Higley was then ordered to take off her tennis shoes, which she did, and she threw them at the screener. I was sweating. I was crying. I was a mess, said Higley of Jupiter. Now, let me perhaps explain.
Jupiter, Florida?
Jupiter is in Florida. I know people from Jupiter. And
also from Jupiter, Florida.
We call them Jovians, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
She was heading to Palm Beach International with her family that September day. I've never been touched like that before by another woman. Scores of women and some men say they have suffered similar humiliation during a pat-down standard procedure since September 22nd. And since September 22nd? In secondary screenings at airport checkpoints. Was there another incident on September 22nd? Or did they just start a new policy this year?
Tell you in a minute. Keep going.
Do you know, Bernie?
I don't know. As far as I know, they've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, I don't know about September 22nd. Anyway, maybe that's September 11th, and it's just a typo. Many protest that it is an unnecessary invasion of privacy. The security process is going too far. People should be outraged, fuming, doing something to change this, said Rhonda Gainier, a New York attorney, who said she was given a breast exam while flying out of Tampa in October. It's like we have no rights anymore. The Transportation Security Administration, TSA, said the procedure is crucial to security. Less than a month earlier, two Russian airliners exploded, and authorities think two women hid explosives under their clothing. The TSA requires female screeners pat down women, male screeners check men. The back of the hand must be used on breasts, genitals, and buttocks, and passengers can request to be done out of public view. Now, I remember when I went to California, I mentioned this, in fact, the guy was saying to me, I'm using the back of my hand, like I couldn't see that for myself, but apparently he has to notify people that he's using the back of his hand because that somehow makes it a whole lot better. About 10 to 15% of passengers are selected for secondary screenings, chosen for a number of reasons. Now, this is interesting because they're actually reporting what we mentioned last week. The airlines are required to randomly select a certain number of passengers for closer inspection. The carrier will stamp the code SSSS on the ticket of a passenger selected for this process. Passengers who wear loose clothing are more apt to receive a pat-down, as are travelers who set off metal detector alarms or exhibit suspicious behavior, such as protesting when asked to take off their shoes. So do that, and you're even more of a suspect. The thing that gets me, though, is I had S's printed on my boarding pass both times, both there and on the way back, so that doesn't seem very random to me. All right. Most passengers understand the TSA must balance passenger privacy against the threat of terrorism, but that's according to the TSA. That's their perspective there. There may be a few instances where screeners took the procedure a little too far, they say, but the screeners are still adjusting to this new process as well. No consolation, though, to Higley, an American Airlines flight attendant. Yeah, she's a flight attendant, who on September 29th was returning from vacation in Lake Tahoe with her husband and two-year-old son, 1 week after the tougher rules went into effect. I guess it did go into effect this year. She was 4 months pregnant. It was her 39th birthday, and the family had to catch a connecting flight in Dallas. A screener asked Higley to step aside for a pat-down and an additional check with the wand. She put that thing in between my legs like you wouldn't believe, Higley said. It was very offensive. Higley, who was not wearing any metal, said the wand beeped as it passed over the small of her back. She grabbed my rear end in an offensive way. I spun around and said, "Don't touch me again." I was really starting to get offended. Just the same, Higley said, the screener reached over and cupped my right breast. At this point, I'm starting to shake. I'm starting to cry. I said, if you touch me again, I'm going to hit you. Her husband, an airline pilot, tried to join her in her protest, but he could only look on because he wasn't allowed near where she was being searched. You know, I got mixed feelings about this because, in a way, I think everybody should go through this. Everybody should go through the same humiliation. Airline pilots, stewardesses, elected officials, old people, young people, black people, white people, everybody. Everybody should be subjected to the exact same treatment. Because, you know, a well-dressed terrorist is going to walk right past the screeners who think the only kind of terrorist is wearing loose clothing or has long hair. So if you really think that this is a valid method of finding a terrorist, then by all means, subject the 85-year-old nun to the same treatment that you would to the Arab-looking guy. You know, I mean, is that not fair?
Makes sense to me.
Jim, you look aghast.
This is, you know, I'm thinking, you know, how can I reconcile, although I can, I can hold opposite ideas in my head quite easily, but I was going to say, how can I reconcile being a Republican with the thought that, you know, if I saw this sort of thing to you know, someone I was with, I would probably assault and kill the screener.
You would kill the screener? Okay, well, you'd definitely be checked out.
I tend to go too far too easily.
Yeah, I've noticed. But, you know, it's I guess the person you're traveling with would appreciate the concern. Oh, boy. Well, you know, it's not all limited to the United States. We always say that. Britain's Tony Blair put tackling crime and terrorism at the heart of his re-election bid on Tuesday, drawing accusations of scaremongering among those leveled at his ally, U.S. President George W. Bush, outlining legislative plans for the next parliamentary session, expected to be curtailed by a vote in May, which is going to be a very interesting vote. The Prime Minister unveiled measures to keep Britain's streets safer and protect the country from terror attacks. Queen Elizabeth has gotten involved in this. My government recognizes that we live in a time of global uncertainty with an increased threat from international terrorism and organized crime, said Queen Elizabeth as she read Blair's proposals to Parliament in an elaborate ceremony. Get this, the government plans to introduce identification cards, yes, identification cards for everybody in England, and set up a British version of the FBI, which will be known, and I'm not kidding here, the Serious Organized Crime Agency. Serious Organized Crime Agency. And that spells out SOCA. Sorry. I just wanted an excuse to play soca music, but the thing is, you know, they could make this a lot more, you know, fun for everybody. You have this playing in the background, you know, whenever investigation's going on, it just becomes a more festive atmosphere, huh? Who can object to being searched or questioned or having your privacy invaded when you have this festive carnival atmosphere? Well, maybe a few. Anyway, so yeah, SOCA, the Serious Organized Crime Agency, they're not off to a good start with those letters, but...
I have a little more on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a quote... Am I on? I have a quote from Blair. With terrorism, illegal immigration, and organized crime operating with so much greater sophistication, identity cards, in my judgment, are long overdue. Now, I want to point out a couple of things. First, 52 years ago, 1952, Great Britain gave up on national identity cards right after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're up against the Nazis. I mean, they realized what's bad about identity cards, and they gave it up. But no, they're back.
How did they realize it? How did they realize that... That it was bad.
I don't know.
I would imagine the people had something to say about it. And when the people speak up and say something, you know, the government has to listen. Look what's happening in Ukraine right now. You have a similar situation to what happened in the United States. Albeit, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit different, but you had a situation where exit polls showed something different than the actual official results.
Oh,
but the difference...
Here we go.
Well, I'm not saying that we have the same kind of voter fraud. We do have voter fraud. It definitely exists. My point is, though, that people tend to care more. They tend to get on the streets and get a little more involved. And it's because of that that it's being taken more seriously. In this country, we just say, yeah, whatever. We'll have Bush for another 4 years. We're not going to really focus on the suspicious things.
Well, back to British identity cards. There have been some protesters who brandished a rubber stamp in the form of a supermarket barcode, calling the government's plans for a database were, quote, the moral equivalent of barcoding the entire population. And one of the things I find scary about this British proposal is that they are going to accompany the national ID card with a national database, which will include names, addresses, and biometrics, including computerized fingerprint records.
Well, I'm surprised that only a few people are speaking out against this. I suspect that's going to change. And I think, you know, the people of England, they respect privacy enough to not let this happen. And if they do let it happen, they've got nobody to blame but themselves.
I have a couple stories about tracking.
Well, tell us one. Maybe if we're good, we'll listen to another one later.
Oh, all right. All right. The one that bothered me most was about this thing that seems to be sweeping schools in Texas. They're issuing all these students a little RFID, radio frequency identification card, that they pass over a reader in their school bus when they get on and when they get off, a reader at the door of their schoolhouse when they go in and when they go out, readers within the school when they go to gym, when they go to lunch, when they go to their lockers. So this is supposedly to ensure that they don't get kidnapped.
It can also ensure that they're supposed to, you know, that they're in the places they're supposed to be in.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
How many kidnappings have occurred in the school district you're talking about?
As far as I can tell, there are none mentioned in this article.
And that's proof that it works.
Yes.
Well, even though that it's full of glitches and it can't tell where people are, and even though it's only been instituted for a couple of months.
I think
you know, kids are probably smart enough. Kids are probably smart enough to like get around this system too. Figure out ways.
Yeah, they've talked about loaning them from one kid to another.
Mm-hmm.
They've mentioned that they also take attendance with this, and there are kids who have not attended school all year who are getting straight A's.
And, just because someone swipes a card does not mean that that's the actual person. That's why you need the cameras and eventually the guns. Well, you know, repeat offenders just simply do not listen to reason. All right. We have a bunch of letters, as always. Our email address, oth@2600.com. We're going to look at a couple of them. And we'll be taking phone calls, 212-209-2900. By the way, we're back on Wall Street this week. Thanks to everybody who helped us out last week when we were over at Sirius, which was quite an adventure. We all moved up there to Midtown. And the station has been bobbing around Manhattan, or actually around the whole tri-state area. Well, New York metropolitan area, anyway. We were in Brooklyn for a while. We were uptown. We were in Midtown. And now we're back here on Wall Street. The whole problem was caused by some kind of fire underground, and it took the Verizon many, many, many days to restore the phone service that we needed to get to the transmitter. So we had to use our ingenuity, and that's one thing people at VAI have. So thanks, everybody, for making that possible. And it really was an adventure, seeing how Sirius actually looks. I mean, boy. Hundreds of radio stations, not really radio stations, though, kind of like music boxes that are just programming different channels. And we were sort of one of them, even though we weren't on their particular system. It was an eye-opener. Anyway, hey there, guys. Do you have any pictures of Iraqi payphones for the magazine? I'm currently stationed at Al Basra International Airport, which has one payphone. It's also the only one I've seen in Iraq since I've been here. Signed, Will. Well, Will, by all means, send it in. We'd like to see an Iraqi payphone, and I assume it's an Iraqi payphone and not simply a payphone that was planted there by the United States. I wouldn't wander around too much looking for payphones, though. It's probably probably pretty dangerous to do that. But if you see a picture, and you won't get into too much trouble for taking a picture, see a payphone, right? You won't get into too much trouble for taking a picture of it. Please do so and send it to us. You can either send it to us digitally or send it to us via U.S. mail. We'll give out the address in just a little bit. A bunch of people wrote in to tell us what FOUO meant, because we were asking about that last week when we were reading something. I'm sure you've either heard, remembered, or looked it up, but FOUO is an acronym which means for official use only. Great info page on www.wasc.noaa.gov/WRSO/security_guide/FOUO.htm. Thanks, Sid, for sending that one in. Redbird, do we have any updates on the MetroCard project? We've gotten a bunch of people sending things in. One person sent us, what, a U-card?
Yeah, an old U-card, an old U-card. Blue U-card.
Look at that, Jim's salivating. Yeah, take a look at that.
We also got some sealed blue MetroCards.
Oh, my God, I can't believe who this is from.
You better not reveal anything. Turn down your mic if you're going to like say something like that. No. Bill Redbird, why don't you tell us a little bit more about what we've learned in the last week or so?
Oh, well, an interesting thing on the First Avenue station at 14th Street where with the L line.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably still up, so if anyone's curious, they can go look at the MEM machine there.
What's an MEM machine?
That's the express machine that takes only credit cards.
Only credit cards, okay.
So if you look at that machine, you'll notice that it didn't boot up. It got stuck at the BIOS system configuration screen.
Hang on. This is the subway station at First Avenue and 14th Street, the L station, going east or west?
Going east.
Going east, okay. Yes. So if you run over there now and look at the machine. It only takes credit cards. It's right. In some crazy state.
Sure. You can learn a lot about the system this way. I'll read some of the stuff that was on the screen.
Okay.
It has a Celeron processor running at 300 megahertz. Let's see. No floppy drives.
That's a real surprise.
Well, the AMI BIOS state is 07-15-95. It's got a 6-gig hard drive, about 16 megs of RAM.
A 6-gig hard drive for that one machine?
Yes.
That's the machine that just takes credit cards. Why would that need a 6-gig hard drive?
I'm not sure.
You sure that's not for the whole station?
I have speculation.
Yeah.
The machine is supposed to, any machine in the transit system is supposed to handle at least 3,000 transactions while it's disconnected from the main system. So I would think 3,000 transactions on a credit card, the serial number of the MetroCard they issue, the amount of the transaction, the credit card number.
Would take nothing near 6 gigs.
Really?
I don't think so.
Well, also assuming that it's running Windows, you'd need... enough to hold the operating system and whatever.
Okay, that could take 6 gigs easily.
Well, if Jim said it's true, then it means if it loses its connection, it'll still off. How can it verify a valid credit card if it's offline, Jim?
That's a good question.
Or maybe that's an opportunity to use your old or found expired credit cards when you happen to know that it's down.
That's another good idea.
The question I have though is why is this thing not booting?
Oh. It seems like it should have booted. It found the boot record fine, and it's just kind of frozen there.
Well, the last thing it says on the screen is what?
Searching for boot record from IDE0, okay.
So what should come after that? Well, if anybody knows offhand that knows Windows, what the next thing is, that's what's wrong with that machine.
All right. And we can come down there's here. Also a couple of PCI devices. They're all on board. The bridge device, IDE, VGA, USB controller, and Ethernet.
Ethernet.
Right.
Well, I imagine it has to talk to other machines in the station, at least.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, here's a letter, but it's addressed to Mike, so it's only fair if I try to call Mike. So, Bernie, don't panic if you hear dial tones and other strange noises as we try to reach Mike. Okay, we got a dial tone there. We're going to try to reach Mike, and hopefully this will go through on the first attempt. Keep in mind, I'm dialing without hearing the tones, so I'm not entirely sure the tones are working, but hopefully they are. And, of course, Mike is in transit right now, so it's possible that we won't reach him at all. Okay, we're reaching somebody. Don't you hate it when someone's cell phone rings? And lots of times it doesn't ring for them.
Hi, this is Mike's phone, but it's not Mike.
Great.
Leave a message.
Okay, yeah, typical.
Page this.
No, we're not going to page you. Okay, now I have to figure out how to hang up on the thing. Actually, I don't know how to do that. I'm just going to leave it on hold. Bernie, are you back?
I'm here.
Okay.
You can hang up on me if you want.
No, I'm not going to do that either. It'll hang up itself. I just don't want to take a chance of losing you because
we're
the phone
system.
We're
not going to hear the thing?
We might. We very well might. Who knows? But our phone number is... 212-209-2900, and by all means, give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. We have a few more pieces of mail and other news items, but we'll get to those later if there's any kind of time for that. Now, Redbird, do you have more information for us?
Yeah, we have some letters here that were sent.
Go ahead.
We can start. All right. The U on the employee MetroCard pass means unlimited. This is for unlimited usage 24/7, the only limitation being a 6-minute pass back. Regular unlimited MetroCards, either 30-day, 7-day, or the FunPass sold to the public have an 18-minute passback. A passback is the amount of time you have to wait after swiping your MetroCard before you can use your MetroCard again. Attempting to use the MetroCard during the passback period, you will get a just-used message on the turnstile display, and that comes from the person who sent us the employee card and all the old blue cards. There's also some information on the magnetic stripe. For your information, the magnetic stripe on the MetroCard has a magnetic strength of approximately 450 oersteds. Credit and debit cards normally have a magnetic strength of approximately 24 to 30 oersteds on their magnetic stripes. The magnetic stripe has two fields or tracks. There is a read field and a write field.
Okay. So we've been getting some New York City MetroCards in response to our chastising of the listeners for not sending us New York City. We got a lot of Chicago, and we want to thank people for Chicago. Do we need any more Chicagos?
Yeah. I mean, we can't do too much without, you know, a bunch of samples. So we have a few we don't have. very many, though.
And people have started sending us cards from other cities. We got some from Montreal, which is nice, but do we need those?
Sure. I mean, you know.
I don't want to be overwhelmed with all kinds of different cards. I guess if you have a transit system that has magnetic stripes, send them on in, and we'll try and figure out like what it's all about, and maybe you know, learn something about that system and other systems, and maybe the New York City transit system as well.
I have a collection of Philadelphia SEPTA, the Southeast Pennsylvania Transit Authority. I have a collection of monthly transit passes going back 7 years. I don't know if that would be helpful.
Yes, Bernie, then we ask you to send those in as well.
Well, I'll start sending some in.
Okay. You can put multiple ones in a single envelope and just send them all in one package. we'll have a weekend's worth of work there. The address to send it to is 2600 P.O. Box 99, Middle Island, New York, 11953. And if you're outside the United States, we're inside the United States, so put that on your envelope as well. Okay, 212-209-2900 is our phone number. And good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to just mention my experience with airport security.
You know, I'd like to see you go through airport security.
No, you know, I remember when this first started. It was after the TWA 800, and I remember, you know, going through, because I had paid with cash at the Cincinnati airport, and I booked the flight like the same day, and that flagged me for additional screening, so... I'll never forget that.
That and a number of other things, but okay, go ahead.
All right, the TSA guy said, you know, he took that piece of swab and waved it around my carry-on bag and said, do you know what I'm doing? And I said, yeah.
You're Tinkerbell, and you're casting a magic spell on me.
No,
that's the right answer.
The other thing I wanted to mention is, you know that toll-free numbers are becoming annoying. In other words, people have been trying to get toll-free numbers that spell out things like 1-800...
Bar none.
One guy, bar none, or 1-800, whatever for their business, or JM lawyer. But every time you call that 800 number, you get the same recording. Whoops.
That's almost as annoying as other things.
Well, wait a minute.
Mention.
You know what I'll do? I'll just play the recording, because you may recognize this.
It's Thanksgiving, okay? I gotta, like, let him go, you know, one day.
All right, well, when you want an 800 number, this is what you get.
I can be very patient.
Call the talk line at 800-559-TALK for exciting people nationwide. That's 800-559-TALK.
Now, when you call any 800 number, every, like, 800 JM lawyer, 800 New York City Transit bus, 800, you know, any one of those vanity numbers, it's the same thing.
That ad?
That and what? The point is that's
no. You're telling us that when you call any 800 number and it doesn't pick up immediately, you get that same ad?
No, it's not that it doesn't pick up immediately. Like, all right, they advertise...
Rebel, what are you saying? Please, tell us.
What I'm saying is that when you want a toll-free number, you say, I want my number to be 1-800-REBEL or something. They're going to say, oh, that number is taken, but when I call that number, you get that recording.
So these are unassigned toll-free numbers. You get an ad for 595-TALK.
Right, but why are they saying, you know, they're like hogging up the 800 numbers. You know
are
what
you
I mean?
Saying every unassigned number gets you an ad for that service?
Well, not only for that service, but there's another service. Like, I think I'll call...
This is analogous to what happens with domain names on the net that disappear. They're snapped up by various companies and usually linked to an ad that says you can buy this. Yeah, you can
just
buy
like
this domain
West. Or
for hot girls, click here or anything like
but
that.
I don't think entire exchanges are. You know, maybe certain phone numbers are already targeted. I don't know, but I've done my good deed for the day. Thank you, Rebel, and let's move on.
I would just want to say to Rebel. Rebel, there are only about 10 million of these numbers out there, so when you have a complete list of which one of them go to which ads, get back to us.
You know, Mike is still on hold, and I realize now that we're probably leaving a long message on his voicemail. Oh, well. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. This is John from the Philadelphia suburbs. Just wanted to wish you guys happy Thanksgiving to Bernie down in Philly and Jim and Redbird.
Well, thanks. Thanks for your call.
And also, I got the Freedom Downtime DVD from the Fifth Hope, and I love it. And just, you know, my heart to Kevin, and to Bernie down in Philly for the stuff that happened to those guys.
Well, thanks very much for calling in and for expressing your thoughts.
Thank you.
Thanks. We had a lot of fun putting it together.
Yeah, we sure did.
Well, it's a good DVD.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And, in fact, we got a piece of mail similar to that, where someone was asking, in your movie, while you're... they called it Freedom Takedown. Can you believe that? Freedom Takedown. Oh, my God. Takedown, of course, being the movie that we were protesting in Freedom Downtime. in the movie, while you're protesting outside of Miramax, there's a lawyer present. You make mention that he was from the National Lawyers Guild or some such organization. Could you let me know how this works? Is he in there in a voluntary capacity? Does he get paid? And I have also found one Easter egg in the movie so far. Yeah, I'm slow. Well, actually, you know, you're not so slow. It's, we expect to be able to find these Easter eggs a lot faster, and there's a whole lot of them in there. And if you find one, please email us, oth@2600.com. Let us know. That was signed PJ. And PJ, yes, National Lawyers Guild, tremendous organization. In fact, I can't say enough good things about these people because I've gotten to work with them a lot since the events of August 31st through September 2nd, where a lot of us were arrested just for standing on the street in New York. These guys were there every step of the way. They're still there. They're going to be representing me in court this coming Monday. In fact, if anybody wants to come to the trial, it's Monday, November 29th, 9:30 a.m. at 100 Center Street. And it's going to be fun for everybody. I don't know how long it's going to last. I don't know how interesting it's going to be. But these guys from the National Lawyers Guild, they've been representing virtually everybody who's been arrested, over 1,000 people. And they've been quite successful in getting things thrown out. Going to their website, www.nlg.org, National Lawyers Guild is an association dedicated to the need for basic change in the structure of our political and economic system. We seek to unite the lawyers, law students, legal workers, and jailhouse lawyers of America in an organization that shall function as an effective political and social force in the service of the people, to the end that human rights shall be regarded as more sacred than property interests. And yes, a lot of people do volunteer there, and they accomplish great things. They're located here in Manhattan. Their phone number is 212-679-5100, website nlg.org. And if anyone has $1 million to spare, please give it to these guys because I think they deserve it. So are we taking another phone call? Yes. Good evening. You're on the air.
Jim, what did you want me to do?
You sound too much like someone else. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Go ahead. Yes.
Finally.
I'm sorry to keep you waiting, but, you know, some people call more than once.
Yeah. You know, those people, you can't help it if they're jerks.
You can't. You can smack them sometimes, but it doesn't seem to help. All right. So what's on your mind?
All right. Hearing of all these, what's going on in the airplanes and things like that, and like, I've been reading the news, and I kind of come upon how they're basically telling us in our face, look, this is what's going to happen. You're going to become our slaves. And people just don't realize it. Like, they have, they're talking about over a few years of microchip tagging will eliminate the problems of luggage, you know? Just like they were talking about, on dogs and...
Uh-huh. Uh-oh. Hello? All right, who's still here? Is anybody still here?
Bernie S. is here.
Okay, you're still there. All right, we lost the caller. I don't know why we lost the caller. But that was on his end, wasn't on our end. But, I think he was making the point that a lot of these things are tried out on animals first, like microchipping dogs and cats, and soon we'll be microchipping human beings in addition to our luggage.
Well, there's an intermediate step. They're going to start microchipping pharmaceuticals with RFID tags, supposedly to ensure that no counterfeit drugs get into the American body.
How is that going to work exactly?
Apparently...
The drug itself is going to have an RFID?
No, okay. the bottle. So still you can probably steam the protective seal open and pour out the real drugs and put in placebos or imitation or whatever.
I'm more worried about the FDA approved drugs lately.
Yeah, I'm more worried about the FDA, but never mind that. You're off the hook. I love your radio show and magazine. I know this may sound like a lame idea. However, I enjoy your T-shirts, hats, and sweatshirt. I would think that a good number of your readers and fan base work in a place that would require a tie. I know hackers would look down at them as a noose. On the other hand, anyone that wanted to show support for your many causes, be it the magazine or radio station, we'd be able to do so at work. That way, if someone came up and said, nice tie, it would turn into a conversation. I know you did not start out to make a clothing line. I'd just like to be able to work in a DECSS, Blue Box, WBAI, or 2600 tie. I think it would also be funny to show up in court or a job interview with a hacker tie, signed Brandon. Well, Brandon, it's an interesting idea.
I think it's an excellent idea. I mean, if the MTA can have New York City subway map ties, Why can't we have a tie that says, you know, across it, WBAI.org or
TimesRecorder.com? Are they considered proper attire, though, in courtrooms and you know, legal events and
you can go
attire?
Into a courtroom without a tie, as I have found
okay,
out.
Okay, but I'm just saying, like, as a lawyer, I think maybe you need to, I don't know. But if you're in a place that requires a suit and tie, can the tie look like a bumper sticker?
You can wear a Nehru's jacket as a lawyer and get away with it. I want to point
out. Or leather, as our attorney.
And besides, it doesn't have to look like a bumper sticker. A simple repetitive pattern.
No, I'm just pushing it. I'm seeing how far they, you know, you have an actual tie, but it doesn't look like a tie.
Well, you can wear a tie with like a Playboy Playmate on it. That's considered not classy enough. Okay? So it's still technically a tie. Whereas.
How do you know this?
General observation.
I won't probe too deeply. And someone else has an interesting suggestion, too. I've begun a ribbon replacement project. I actually started solo early last week and then sent small batches of magnets to friends around the country later in the week. We're talking about the yellow ribbons on cars that are actually magnets, that you see them everywhere now, and red, white, and blue ones. And they all say things like, support our troops, or there's some other ones, too. God bless the USA.
Remember 9/11.
Yeah, Jean Rastafari, all kinds of things. and generally, I'll just target cars that already have magnets. I'll usually look for a car that has more than one, go through my pocket, find a convincing simulation, peel off the original and slap mine on. Just one, though. They're less likely to notice that way. I have to say, it is hard to resist putting them on cars with Bush 04 bumper stickers that don't have magnets on them to begin with, so generally I don't resist. I'm collecting all the captured magnets on the inside of my front door. It's starting to look like Tyler Durden's collection of sacrificial driver's licenses. All right. I'll take your word for it. Anyway, on the site, I give instructions for making the magnets. What I don't give, which I'm still debating giving, is the suggestion that if the magnet thing seems too inconvenient, as always, inkjet sticker paper, but that's certainly way more invasive and way more rugged. However, it does present more possibilities for coverage than cars alone. It's also more permanent. But I'm not suggesting anything. Visit the website www.visitordesign.com/support_subversion. Yeah, I've got mixed feelings about this because I don't think you should mess with other people's speech. If people want to put these things on their cars, fine. But I do think there needs to be some kind of a response. I do think something else needs to be said. Now, mind you, if you just make a yellow ribbon that says something else, even if you stick it over someone else's or if you put it on your own car, nobody can read that type. You have to get really, really close to the car to be able to see what it actually says. And it doesn't stand out that well. You need a different color for the ribbon or maybe even a different type of ribbon altogether to get a different message out there. And I'm sure there is a different message. I'm sure there is. People just need to, you know, come up with one.
I'm lost. What does his replacement sticker say? I didn't get the
idea. I would imagine if you visit the website, you'll probably see it there. He didn't say in the letter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of things you can say. I would say bring them home, you know. My ribbon would say that, and I could think of a couple other things to say, too.
Well, I can support that, although the methodology that we would agree on, well, we wouldn't agree on.
Well, I said I wouldn't replace other people's stickers. I would put them on my own.
Oh, no, I mean the methodology of bringing them home, but anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, how else would you bring them home?
Neutron bombs.
You bring our troops home with a neutron bomb?
No, we
explain that one.
Substitute one for the other. But anyway, let's go on.
Oh, yeah. You're in the spirit of the holiday.
Yes, I am.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, guys.
How you doing?
Zephyr here. John Lutz's old friend.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Okay. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say you guys have the best show on BAI. You're like the oasis of sanity. You know, and after November 2nd, what can I say?
Well, you know, there's lots of sanity. Lots of oases here. Oasi? There's lots of sane people wandering around. We just look all confused right now.
I'm serious. I mean, I wait for the show all week so I can hear some like-minded people. Your Republican buddy there, notwithstanding. But anyway, this guy with the... I like his thing because I'm really sick of those ribbons.
Uh-huh.
But in this day and age, he's got to be careful. They're going to take his prints off this thing.
Yeah, no, I maintain you should not mess with other people's vehicles or stickers or whatever. Put your own up. But then, you know, I'm sure people will start messing with yours. And then we'll deal with that situation when that occurs. But I think right now the important thing is to have some kind of an alternate message, something a little bit more, in my opinion, sensible.
But whether or not he should do it or not, I'm just saying. I hope he's using cotton gloves or something. Cause,
yeah.
I mean, come on, look at the world today. They're gonna take his fingerprints off of it.
Or the cameras
okay,
will get
up
them.
The work.
Yeah, all right. Cameras will be monitoring what everything people do in parking lots. So, you know, you got to be careful of these things. Just assume you're always being watched at all times. And good evening. You're on the air. Oops. Well, that's a lost opportunity. All right. Let's go up here. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. I was just going to mention that there is a group that puts out bumper stickers that says, end the war now, support our troops.
Are they bumper stickers?
I
or
mean,
are they...
No, the magnet. I'm the magnet? The magnet ribbon, yeah. I have several. I got it at the Million Worker March.
And what are they shaped as?
Oh, right.
Huh? What are they shaped as? What are they
like? Just like the other ribbons, but it says end the war now. So, you know, it says end the war now.
Uh-huh. And what color? What color are they?
The same. Yellow.
Same color. See, the thing is, I don't think you can read those in the car. I don't think you can read those. If you stand up to the bumper, yeah, you can read it then.
Right.
But it's just, you know, from a distance of, say, 20, 30 feet, will you be able to tell one from the other?
Yes and no. Well, 20, 30 feet, you're not able to do that, no.
Right.
No.
And if you're in a car, you know, you shouldn't be closer than that to another car.
Well, New York City you are.
That's true, okay.
In New York City you definitely are. And, you know, I've gotten responses from people, you know.
What kind of responses?
Oh, horn tooting, you know that kind of thing.
Okay, that's uh-huh. good horn tooting, yeah. I take it. Not
The first night I had it, some teenagers took it and put it on a police car.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now that's a project right there.
Right.
That's a project.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
So it's out there. You know,
yeah. Well, it's good to know people are responding.
Sorry, I don't have the website here, but mm-hmm. there is a website where they sell them, and they're very inexpensive.
Yeah, I imagine they must be because they're everywhere.
No, I mean these, the political one, the more political ones, uh-huh. you know.
But
are.
In general, I'm saying that the actual technology to make magnets and stick them
oh,
in front,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Something
yeah,
I looked into the pricing of that, and and it's not too bad, mm-hmm. On that. So, yes, the technology has advanced to the point where they can, in fact, produce tens of thousands of these within a day's time.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right. Hopefully, there'll be a use for them. Thanks very much for your call.
Yes, indeed.
Take care. Now, Redbird, we have we got some email, too, on top of everything else. One person sent in a bunch of...
MEM and MVM numbers from Astoria Boulevard.
MVM, that's the vending...
The vending machine, the regular standard.
MetroCard vending machine, is that
yes.
what that stands for?
Yes.
And now, there are numbers attached to every receipt that indicate the station and the machine that you got the thing from. What are these numbers exactly?
Well, the first four digits, letters, actually... numbers. that's the ID number of the MVM or MEM, and you could actually find those on the machine itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's... there's a letter and then seven numbers after the MVM.
Give us an example of one.
Okay, for example, Astoria Boulevard and Hoyt Street. 5303, and then in parentheses it would say R514-0402.
Okay, so the first four digits, that's the actual machine number.
Right, and you can find those on the machine itself.
The second four digits, which are in the parentheses...
seem to be the station number.
Station number,
begins... Actually.
That begins with a letter, and I was told the letter indicates IND, BMT, or IRT. That's I heard that someplace, too. And then the last four, that's the mystery, because they all seem to be repeating. What are some of the examples of the ones we have?
For example, for one of the MVM machines would be 0400. The next one would be 0401. And then the MEM is 0402.
So we see 0400 a lot, and we also see 07 and 05. So they mean something. We don't know what. We're out of time. We don't have time to talk about it. But if you have any suggestions or ideas, let us know. If you have receipts from MetroCard machines, send them on in, or just read us the numbers that are on them. Again, the address 2600 P.O. Box 99, Middle Island, New York, 11953. And we'll be back again next week with another action-packed edition of Off the Hook. Until then, have a happy Thanksgiving, and let us know whatever it is you find out, because there's all kinds of things out there to learn about. See you next week.
Yeah. says that he knows where it's at. Now he'd like to go to Spain or somewhere like that.
Hey, you're listening to WBAI New York.